Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, continuing the wonderful tradition of opening with a good voluntary stutter. I am Peter Reitzes here with a good friend, first time guest on Stutter Talk, Dr. Yelena Arbach. Could you tell us how the correct pronunciation of your name, please? Because I know I messed it up.
Peter, you sounded perfect. Hi, everyone. My name is Yelena Auerbach. Great. And I'm so psyched to be on the show. I'm a long-term listener.
And you were one of the very first people I met in the stuttering world, and you hold a special place in my stuttering history. So it's my honor to have you on the show. Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I just want to remind everyone that if you are an Amazon user, please use the Amazon search engine that's at Stutter Talk to make your Amazon purchases, because Stutter Talk will receive a percentage of your purchase and it does add up. So you go to StutterTalk.com, and in the left-hand sidebar, there's a link to the Stutter Talk Amazon search engine. And if you use that search engine to get to Amazon.com, Stutter Talk gets some money from things you buy. So, Yelena, we're going to be covering two topics today, or two big topics during today's show. One is a medical home for people who stutter, and the second topic is the shifting severity of stuttering. Yelena is an associate professor of medicine at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, an academic teaching hospitalist at Montefiore Medical Center, and a person who stutters. And you're also a longtime participant in the stuttering self-help community. Let's get started with the medical home idea, Yelena. Why do you think that some type of medical center or medical home is needed to treat people who stutter?
That's something that I was pondering about for a while at this point, and I think I probably should start answering this question by just saying that, first of all, before becoming a provider, practitioner, before I was able to navigate and help others to navigate the system of healthcare delivery, I'm first of all a person who stutter. And I was a consumer of this system at different points in my life. Needless to say that at the time when I was a teen, stuttering therapy was even more mystified, and many practitioners did not know what to do. So just as an example of my wild, wild past, I was voluntarily committed to psychiatric hospitalization when I was 13, I believe, and I was in the ward with other teenagers with milieu of different other psychiatric problems, where I spent roughly a few months. And by the end of this few months stay, there was a session of hypnotism. I'm not joking, Peter. Led by the chief adolescent psychiatrist of Moscow. So this is like a big shot, okay? Staging this whole hypnotism session, after which I was supposed to stop stuttering. So it just to bring us back to very recent dark ages where people really didn't know what to do with it. So I came here when I was 18. Basically spent some years learning the ropes, learning the language, and my first attempt at stuttering therapy were with certified speech therapists. And I was helped and trained how to speak with easy onset and enunciate and prolongate and breathe. And everything was nice and sweet, you know, you can get the hang of it. It's not brain surgery, right? But I could not use those skills, and I was wondering what was that self-destructive force in me that doesn't allow. So as I was becoming more sophisticated consumer of therapies, of stuttering therapy, you know, and internet became a tool to learn about different approaches and different techniques. I dibbled and dabbled with some technological things like SpeechEasy was absolute waste of time and money. I tried to work with few speech therapists in my insurance plans, once again, doing more of the fluency enhancing techniques because, you know, I wanted to be fluent for the sake of being able to do my work and be professionally successful. And then after realizing that this is just not working, something is not in place, I'm realizing that there is a need for more of the multidisciplinary and established approach to provide stutterers with informed options about therapy and let the stutterers know about expected outcomes, about the duration of treatment, and different tools that stutterers can have to stay in tune. So that was my personal thing with the stuttering therapy. And also, just to add why I'm thinking that multidisciplinary, not just the speech therapy approach is needed. At some point, I, you know, like I had multiple theories, and I said, maybe, you know, if I will manage my anxiety, which is not my natural energy, I'm not an anxious person as long as I don't have to speak, but due to the nature of, and I don't want to even say my profession, due to the nature of life, right? We're communicators, we have to talk. I said, maybe if I will be helping myself with some medications just to not feel so anxious about the process of speaking, maybe that should be something that I should explore. And to make the long story short, few of the very respected psychiatrists that I worked with said, Yelena, we can't help you. We feel very uncomfortable treating you. We can't prescribe you anything because you don't meet any diagnostic criteria and any set protocols for treatment. So my only option, to make the long story short, would be to fly to California from New York, and I'm a New Yorker, to see Jerry Maguire, who is probably the only stuttering expert psychiatrist. And that's basically it. So the idea is that there is no known way to approach stuttering, and there is no enough providers that are experts in management, multifaceted aspects of stuttering.
That's a great opening. How about this? Let's just put the medical home aside for a second, the multidisciplinary idea aside for just a second, and let me go through a few of the points you made just so we can understand them a little bit better. You basically said that the SpeechEasy device was a waste of time. So for the listeners who don't know, the SpeechEasy is a device that you wear in the ear. They're very small, and they provide you with delayed auditory feedback and frequency altered feedback. And for some people, it reduces stuttering in some situations. What was your major problem with that device?
Basically, the effect of SpeechEasy is very similar to electroconvulsive therapy. It works as the hammer to the brain tool, meaning it's confuses the hell out of you. I'm sorry, can I use those words on air?
I think hell's okay. I think that is passable.
All right. So initially, when you just like hearing your own voice in the ear and you're not exactly thinking about the situation, you're not paying attention to what you're exactly saying and to the cues from the listeners, but the only thing that you do, you're really focusing on this annoying voice in the ear. And once this annoyance factor wears off and you get used to that, which happens very fast, for me that would happen by the end of the day, the device would not work. So besides the uncomfortable feeling in the ear and annoyance factor and the fact that you can't use a phone on that side of your head, and you can't use a stethoscope, or you need to, mm-hmm. I mean, that was my professional thing.
Sure,
it,
sure.
It was just not worth the effort, and basically there was no benefit a few hours after wearing that device.
That is really interesting. I never occurred to me about not being able to use the phone on that side of your head, or having to use a stethoscope or other work related object. So it basically sounds like the effect of the device for you wore off rather quickly. Is that fair?
Yes. So as soon as the novelty effect would go away, then the brain would just readjust back to its old self, and you basically hear yourself stutter, you anticipate yourself stuttering, and you stutter.
So you're describing the speakeasy like a pair of glasses. You take the glasses off, and your eyes are no longer seeing as well as they were with the glasses on.
You know what? Glasses work while you wear them.
Well, right, exactly.
Not. Yeah. So I would say they're like blindfolds that okay. does not let you see and doesn't help you as much. So,
just to be fair to the speakeasy folks, I do know people who stutter who have used the speakeasy with different experiences, and a few have even said to me that what they do get that carries over is increased confidence in their own ability to speak. However, on Stutter Talk, as many people know, we've explored this topic at some great length, but it clearly sounds for you the speakeasy was not the way to go. Is it fair? I mean, like, when I hear you talk about speech therapy, it sounds like you were rather disappointed with your therapy or with the options you had in therapy. Is that a fair assessment of it?
Well, first and foremost, as probably many stutterers, I felt disappointed with myself.
Okay.
I was thinking, you know, I am in the country where stuttering is being on the map, where there are providers called speech therapists that are being trained and recognized in management of speech disorders, and they tell me what to do, and I can't. And it's so simple. You just breathe, and you speak on exhalation, and you articulate, and you should be fine. And they could not do that simple thing. So, of course, I was very bitter with my own progress. And, Peter, I may sound very fluent at this point because I'm speaking with you. I don't mind being on air, so that is not a stress factor. But every single day when I have to speak in front of the groups, I do stutter. So, yes, stuttering is a big part of my life, and I think about that probably most of the time.
Yeah, I remember when we were both active in self-help and you were in medical school and a young doctor, and I still do have great respect for you, but, you know, perhaps on another episode we'll explore how you handled medical school with stuttering, and how you put that all together to become so successful. I just want to remind the listeners, this is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzes speaking with Yelena Arbach. And Yelena, let's move on to your idea or your dream of sorts to put together a multidisciplinary home or a medical home for people who stutter. In this sort of ideal service center or medical home, what type of professionals would be part of the treatment group? I assume a speech language pathologist. Who else?
You know, as we say, never assume, Peter.
Ooh, okay. So I thought you, okay. As I thought I read in your email, a speech language pathologist was at the top of the list, but I'll let you say.
I tricked you.
Okay.
speech language pathologists vary in their understanding and their treatment approaches to stuttering. And more I think about stuttering process and stuttering that persists into adult life, my feeling is that supportive therapy, more from psychological twist, I feel should be playing a big role in the stuttering therapy. As you brought on air and I uploaded to you, you actually said it yourself. You said why speech therapists are the ones who are claiming that they are the only ones who can help stutterers. Hmm. Why not? I remember you saying that and I was thinking, this guy has guts because that's, he is like shooting himself in the leg. But idea is that in my mind, I see stuttering process very similar to the person who suffers from panic attacks. It's a kind of far-fetched analogy, but person who suffers from panic attacks can breathe. In certain situations, the mind freezes, they can't breathe, and they feel like they're drowning. Now, those people breathe normally 16 times a minute at any other point in the day, but during that moment, they can't. They either can breathe or they hyperventilate. And guess what? No one sends them to a respiratory therapist to relearn how to use their respiratory muscles, right?
I just want to say that I'm so glad you said that because I have mentioned that when have you ever been to a speech language pathology conference and met a medical respiration expert? Never, right? You know, so yeah, but so I'm with you on that point.
Right. So idea is that for adults who have stuttering persisting into their adulthood, they bring already so many other things about their stuttering persona that becomes more of a weight, becomes more of an issue than mechanisms of speech itself.
Let me just jump in real quick and say a couple of things. I'm pretty sure when you're referring to or comparing stuttering to a panic attack, you're really speaking about adult stuttering and not early childhood stuttering.
That's correct.
Okay, just so the listeners know what you're saying. Okay, it sounded like you had another point that you wanted to make.
Just to finish answering your question, my feeling is that having providers who are trained in understanding of the process of stuttering and who want to work with people of stuttering, that's what's needed. Now, if those providers are coming from the speech therapy training or they're coming from psychotherapeutic training pathway, I think it doesn't matter much. That's my feeling. And just to complete that model, I think having providers who are comfortable and knowledgeable in prescribing medications that can help stutterers with other associated symptoms of living a life as a stutter would be beneficial. And those would be well-trained psychiatrists and maybe medical practitioners who would be helpful to navigate stutterers, that system.
We have so much on the table here. When I was preparing for this show, one of the thoughts that kept going through my head is that on the surface, it seemed to me that somebody would have a hard time putting together a multidisciplinary team because I'm not sure how many psychologists and psychiatrists and medical doctors and counselors and maybe even, you know, sports counselors or sports psychologists. I'm not sure how many of those people know stuttering. So, you know, and to be fair, there's quite a few speech pathologists who don't know stuttering. But my initial reaction was, how are you going to be able to put together a team of people? You know, like, forget the money right now. would you agree that that would be a challenge? Like, I mean, you said a minute ago that you know one psychiatrist who knows stuttering, and that's Gerald McGuire, who happens to be a good friend of this show.
So Rome was not built in one day.
Okay.
Peter, you should give yourself a credit that hundreds and thousands of stutterers throughout the country and throughout the world did not know much about stuttering until Stutter Talk became alive. And that just happened a few years ago. And that's something that can sparkle the interest and can propagate the knowledge. So I see many knowledgeable and willing providers are developing to help people with stuttering. Not that we don't have many people who previously spoke on Stutter Talk had an amazing experience and also the way that they understood and approached stuttering. So I would say as every new scientific medical development, it can go one of two ways. And I will just bring you to my very, very simple view of that process.
Okay.
You either have understanding of the problem, then you formulate your hypothesis and you test it. Once you test your hypothesis, you have the results, and then you say, this is something that is working, and you can say this is the standard of care. Sometimes the process works in reverse. You find something that works, and then you formulate hypothesis, and you test the results. So as with many other neurological processes, something that we can't tangibly feel and image and define easily, sometimes we need to start from the results. So there are a lot of PhD speech pathologist in training, and maybe there will be a movement to look at different stuttering therapy outcomes, fluency versus life modification, successful stuttering management, right? And so there are two main approaches. And once we have results on that with this very nice scale that your other guests on the talk show previously described, I believe it's got Yaros. Once we have the tools to assess, once we have different models of therapy, we can potentially say one approach is more beneficial and that should be a standard of care. It's not something that will be written in stone and never modified in the future, but it's something that consumers of stuttering therapy will be able to research and say, this is something I want to have because it's working. And also speech therapists or behavioral therapists who are planning to work with people who stutter will be able to say, this therapy is working. That's something I will put in the core of my approach and perfect it. So we even lack that. So I would say this is probably the first steps that need to be in place before anyone will say, well, we want to create treatment centers and we don't know what tools to offer because we don't know what's working. Mm-hmm. So there is definitely need for more research and more evidence and more outcomes before we will be able to say that stuttering is something that needs help. Stuttering is something that needs treatment, and we have people who have this condition, who have quality of life issues because of that, and then we can think about how to spread the word, either start the network at academic centers, major regional referral centers. So it's a big undertaking, not something that one person can single-handedly lift from the ground. So that's why I would like to just speak about it, just to bring it out on air, and hopefully somebody who is in the field and who has some ideas about it may be able to come up with these propositions, and maybe that will be something that will be discussed further and developed further.
But just so that I understand, it sounds like what you're saying is before we were to put, we were able as a culture, as a country, to put together these multidisciplinary homes, that you would like to see better evidence-based research to help put that together. Is that fair?
Peter, not me who wants to see the results. I think the payers will want to see the results, because right now stutterers are the ones who do not want to be defined as stutterers, right? Stutterers want to be normal, so they prefer to avoid and kind of suffer quietly because they want to be normal. And once we don't have any really defined tools to offer and say this is something that will make your quality of life better, you don't have to deny that you stutter, you don't have to avoid speaking situations, you don't have to hold back with your professional choices, life choices, there is help at hand. Until we will be able to do that in some systematic way, it will be difficult to offer the treatment. Good treatment.
We have a lot on the table. I've got a lot of notes. How about we take a quick break? We'll come on back and delve even deeper into these issues. Stay tuned. I've never said stay tuned before on the Sutter Talk. First time. Okay, I'll laugh at my own joke.
This is John Stossel. Anything that makes it harder for you to speak limits your life. So if stuttering affects you or your child or someone you know, you can call the Stuttering Foundation for help. The number is 800-992-9392. That's toll-free, 800-992-9392. Or you can visit their website, www.stutteringhelp.org. They can refer you to expert help in your state.
Hi, I'm Tavis Smiley, and you're listening to StutterTalk.com.
This is... Jamie Rocchio, and you're listening to Stutter Talk, where they keep it real and love their listeners.
Go back to those cold sounds and keep my advent to yourself, because it's nothing I don't like. Is it a crisis or a boring change when it's central, so essential? It has a nice ring when you laugh at the low-life opinions, and they're coming to the chorus now. I keep my...
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter writes this here with Yelena, with Dr. Yelena Auerbach, a medical doctor in New York City, and you also teach other doctors, or you teach medical students. Is that correct?
That's correct. I work with medical students at Albert Einstein College of Medicine from their first year of school up until their medicine sub-I rotation that typically happens during their fourth year in medical school. So that's my student teacher role. And I also work with medical residents.
For those who don't know, I'm Peter Reitzes, as I keep saying, and I am a person who stutters and a speech-language pathologist in Brooklyn, New York. Yelena, I don't want to oversimplify what you said, but what I thought you said was that we should be looking for one approved or core treatment for stuttering, like one standard treatment for stuttering. Did I understand you right?
Not necessarily one, but we need to have standard of care in that field of, in the stuttering therapy field. We need to have basically providers agreeing that adults with stuttering have a very complex disorder that requires more than just fluency enhancing techniques, and addressing avoidance, addressing guilt, shame, depression, anxiety, everything associated with stuttering, and not something that particular to just one person who stutter, but I would say many people who stutter would claim a few of those baggage from stuttering. Yeah, so until that will be addressed fully and person would be addressed as a whole, there will be very little effect of just one-sided approach to increasing fluency in people who stutter.
I think, Yelena, what you're describing is sort of the expectation in my field, in speech language pathology. Now, as listeners of Stutter Talk know, I am often the very first person to speak out about my concerns about my own field. I know that most speech pathologists I know are not comfortable working with people who stutter, do not feel prepared to do so. But I want to read you one quote. I had the great pleasure of seeing Scott Yaris present in Brooklyn on Friday. And he actually quoted from the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association's scope of practice. And here's what it says. Speech language pathologists work to improve quality of life by reducing impairments in body functions and structures, activity limitations, participation restrictions, and barriers created by contextual factors. Now, that's something that Asher really got right, and they're really talking about the importance of improving somebody's quality of life. But for some reason, so many professionals are so fluency-centric. So, I'm a believer that there's just, when you're looking for help in this field, whether it's speech pathologist or another professional, you just really have to find somebody who gets what the disorder is about and is willing to help you through this thing. Let me just make one more point to get your feedback. I was bouncing this idea off the newly created Stutter Talk Advisory Council, and a couple people responded back that there are so many good therapists out there, and there are so many good positive stories of people who stutter who find a good therapist, and working with that professional, they're able to make humongous life changes. What do you say to that?
Definitely. There are people, and some of them presented on your stutter talk, and they have amazing insight and great experience in working with people who stutter. But how does consumer know who is that person? And some people may spend a lot of time and resources just looking for somebody that would know what stuttering is all about. Now, once that professional is identified, the second problem resurfaces. Typically, medical insurances do not cover speech therapy sessions well. And professionals who become experts in a field, I don't want to say all, I just want to say that some that I was in contact with, they basically require fee for service payment structure. And to many people, this is not an affordable proposition. Insurances just do not recognize stuttering being such a problem, and I think the the payment structure is such that it does not support providers providing this type of therapy and focusing on this type of therapy. So there is a barrier to finding a provider, and then there is a barrier to actually being able to afford treatment with a knowledgeable practitioner.
Mm, those are great points. So let's just do our duty here, a service, and mention that there are some great places to go if you're looking for a good therapist. I refer people to the Stuttering Foundation, stutteringhelp.org. They have a referral list with a lot of great people on it. There's another referral list for board-recognized fluency specialists at stutteringspecialists.org. And of course, perhaps the best way is if you're at a self-help meeting like the National Stuttering Association, or at a friend's workshop or conference, you can ask other stutterers, who do you see? What has your experience been? So there are definitely places to reach out. And if you go to stuttertalk.com, we have all those links up there. Yelena, what do you make of Bruce Wampold's common factors model, where I don't want to oversimplify it, but the basic thrust of it is that most reasonable psychotherapies and counseling approaches have been found to work. So he basically concluded that if everything works, then we need to find what are the factors that are working and helping. And one of the big ones is the relationship between the therapist and the client. So basically the conclusion is that it's really not about the specific approach or treatment used, but it's about these other things like relationships, motivation. Do you think that applies to stuttering?
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. As I said, as you said, stuttering is such a complicated condition, and it requires a very experienced and also an amazing person to help somebody who suffers from a lifelong condition to find footing. So it requires not just the technical expertise, but it requires a big heart. And therapeutic relationship would not be happening without provider being able to connect with the client.
I found that when I was speaking to people, and I actually spoke to quite a few people before this show, that other professionals outside of my own field were much more open to it. The speech pathologist I spoke to thought, oh yeah, it's a fine idea, but most stutterers probably won't need a team approach. So for the stutterers that would need a team approach, it's probably a good thing. What are some examples in your field that you know of where a multidisciplinary approach is the ideal way to treat a problem?
I will be honest that this idea, as many others, did not come from nowhere. It's a very well known and a very well used model for people who have mental health issues, and also for people with very complex medical conditions. So everything which is not straightforward benefits from this multidisciplinary approach. And it's not something that necessarily needs to be done under one physical roof. Right? We are living at the age of internet, telecommunication, and stuttering therapy does not necessarily need to happen in one room, and on the couch, right? People can just find connection and find the right lead to various providers that can be more attuned to different aspects of their stuttering problem. Idea of multidisciplinary medical home is typically based on understanding that fee-for-service would not be able to work as the model for people who have those multiple problems happening at the same time. So it's typically either grant-funded or federally funded, and clients are being able to benefit from that treatment without necessarily paying to individual providers. And I think that's basically, that's the core of this idea, is that there should be a way to let consumers be able to receive the best therapy without them doing all the footwork and testing and trying different providers and basically finding the best ones and not being capable to pay for it. So there would be some recognized regional networks that would have federal funding, then I think starters would be able to receive qualified care for their problem.
Very interesting points. I'm sure you would agree with this, that that's probably part of the reason why the model works for substance abuse. I know that people who work in substance abuse are very fond of, not all people, of course, but they really like this multidisciplinary approach to treating drug addiction.
Yeah. Well, you see, answering your previous question, I specifically avoided that phrase, substance abuse, because as much as starters shun away from accepting their role as a starter, and I can tell the stories on air how every so often I bumped into a stuttering doctor in the hospital where I work, and I called them on their stuttering, and they initially feel ashamed, and then they feel this unbelievable camaraderie with me right away.
Sure. Yeah.
It's amazing, but so stutterers are afraid to admit the fact that they stutter, and then let alone admitting that they have psychological impact from their stuttering. And once it's linked with substance abuse, forget it, right? But it's all part of the same process. And definitely the idea is that people with mental illness would not be coming and asking for help. They don't do that because they don't have the tools. They don't have the skills. They don't have the power. And people who stutter, you know, they're also underpowered in some way. They would rather never accept the fact that they stutter because they want to be normal, like everyone. It's a normal human process of growing up and just wanting to be like everyone else. So it's difficult to admit that you stutter, and it's difficult to ask for help. So this help should be offered and should be available.
Let me just make a few responses there. I think you're painting stutterers in very broad strokes. So I think, like, I'm personally more comfortable with saying that some people who stutter don't want to admit it. But, you know, because we've been in this world for so long, in the stuttering world, we both know plenty of people who are very happy to stand up, and to different degrees, of course, and to say that they stutter and that they would like help.
And Peter, do you mind if I'll just correct you?
Sure.
They now happy to admit that they're stutter, but almost invariably every stutter had a period of time when they would rather no one know that they stutter, right?
Here's the thing. I my gut is to agree with you on that, but one of the points I've brought up in the past with Stutter Talk is that most people who stutter, if we believe the statistics of how many stutterers are out there, you know, we only know a very, 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 very small percent of stutterers. So I have no idea what most people who stutter experience, because our view of stuttering is, you know, it's like there's 200 channels out there and we only have access to two of them. I mean, but
Exactly. So there is a big group of people that never admit that they stutter. They just, you know, hope that that would not be a big part of their life. And that's how they live their life, hoping that that would not be something holding them back, quietly suffering and quietly feeling the shame and anxiety. From my professional experience, that's what I see in those covert stutterers who are in professional world.
Okay. So, I also wanted to point out that my reason, just so that no one in the listening audience misunderstood, my reason for bringing up substance abuse was just to make the point that people who are counselors or work in treating people with substance abuse issues, like that it's a multi, like using a multidisciplinary model. Rather than one therapist and one client, the client would have the resources of several therapists. So that nobody got confused, that was my point of bringing that up. Yelena, do you have any closing thoughts on this multidisciplinary idea for treating stuttering?
If similar thoughts are running through the heads of other people who stutter, who are in the profession, who never admitted to the world that they're stutterers, and they're contemplating the way to enter the stuttering world, self-help world, self-management world, I think, Peter, self-help world is that self-management world, right? With the help of wonderful experts in the field who dedicated their professional lives to helping people who stutter, there should be some way of exchanging those ideas. And, you know, it's just the beginning. The whole stuttering therapy is a very, very new thing, right? So if it's put on the map, if it's taught in medical schools, if it's taught in psychology classes, if it's recognized by everyone as something that starts in early childhood and then in some people just progresses into adulthood and it's part of someone else's uniqueness, more accepted it is, I think, better that will be for everyone, for the stutterers and for people who listen to them.
Yeah, it's, I really admire your motivation and your, excitement over this. It's great. I need more of that because, every day I'm around professionals who really, really, really want to help the people they work with. And they just don't know much about stuttering at all. I mean, just the basics. I mean, I was in a group a few days ago with a group of speech pathologists and we were talking about stuttering and I realized that the group didn't really understand a very basic aspect of the disorder, which is that most people are going to recover from stuttering without any help at all. So that really the target of the therapy is helping those who don't recover. And it's such a basic idea. So, you know, the assumption is that if 10 children go into therapy at 3 years old and 8 of them recover, well, the idea was, oh, it must be because of therapy. And it's like, well, no, those 8 children are going to recover anyway. We need to keep worrying about the 2 that don't. Anyway, I'm preaching to the converted. I am well aware of that. Let me just ask you one last question, and I'm embarrassed that I didn't ask it much earlier in the conversation. Let's just take 3 of the professionals who may end up on a multidisciplinary team at some point. We have the psychiatrist, we have a psychologist, and a speech language pathologist. What would be their different roles?
Well, as you just defined the roles of those professionals, right?
Well, okay. I should be clearer than that. you have a psychologist and a speech language pathologist and a psychiatrist, and all of them would say they engage in talking therapy. Mm-hmm. So when I got your initial idea for this show, which, by the way, I love this idea, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh, well, the psychiatrist would be expected to explore pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. and the psychologist and the speech pathologist and maybe the psychiatrist too would engage in some form of talk therapy of exploring stuttering, trying to figure out where the person is, gaining awareness and making changes. But just to be devil's advocate of sorts, what's the psychologist going to do that a good speech language pathologist should not be able to do as well?
Or vice versa.
I
think the role of a psychologist or a speech therapist is very interchangeable in helping adults who stutter. As you said, good speech language pathologist is of some sort a therapist, right? But I think based on the difference in training, speech language pathologist will be more adept in helping stuttering a person who stutter to find more comfortable ways in dealing with their disfluencies in the setting that there are other parts of their stuttering that affects their fluency. And psychologists, behavioral therapists would be able to probably explore deeper feelings and deeper and other associated problems associated with stuttering. So it's just based on your field of expertise, what you feel more comfortable doing.
I would be curious to see down the road if your dream does not come a reality in one way or another. You know, when I asked around for this show, quite a few people, and I asked the basic question, has this ever been tried? And everybody said a resounding no. This really hasn't been tried. One person had mentioned to me that there's a speech language pathologist who does therapy with a psychologist. I know a psychologist and a speech language pathologist in Europe who co-teach, but they do group therapy. They do group therapy together. So I do know to some small extent this goes on, but I also know of stories where a person who stutters is being treated by two different professionals and the other professionals don't know it. which can be frustrating I'll be frank with you. It's happened to me once where I'm treating someone for stuttering and then they sort of sheepishly tell you, well, by the way, I'm seeing another person as well, which is fine. It's not about being territorial. It's about, well, what happens if the two professionals are sort of guiding the person who stutters in different ways?
Yeah. So that's a wonderful point. So having this network of providers working with each other, they can, you know, it's always good to be a knowledgeable professional, but we all know that we'll work better as a group. One brain is good, two brains are better, right? One heart is good, two hearts are better. So that's the whole idea, that maybe a person who stutters can benefit from different providers looking from different angles and just helping him cure with different issues in their lives related to stuttering.
Well, those are all excellent points. Yelena, I think we should wrap up this show now. We've been talking for about an hour, and let's save the other great topics for another episode. I am Peter Reitzes here with Yelena Arbach, and I cannot thank you enough, Dr. Arbach, for visiting on Stutter Talk.
Oh, Peter, pleasure is mine. I am honored to be on Stutter Talk. You guys are doing an amazing job. By the way, that was my therapy over the past few years, just listening to your Stutter Talk.
You're okay. So sweet. Thank you. I mean, that's so nice to hear. Thank you for all your kind words about Stutter Talk.
Bye.